Okay, I was originally I was thinking to talk about cosmic strings, but here with Joe around, I figured that people may have heard enough of it. So I'm going to talk about another topic. And the other reason I want to talk about the wave function of the universe is because we are sort of the newcomer in the game, and I know there's experts here and very much like the feedback. So the work I'm going to describe is first a paper we wrote a year ago, which is very speculative. And then we posted a paper a couple weeks ago with Sarge Sarangi that sort of gives some more support arguments on what we have speculated on. So, okay, so, well, by now most people think that in string theory there's a landscape in a sense that there's many, many local metastable vacua. And we always wonder now is that why we end up at a particular point in this cosmic landscape when the possible vacua is a very large number. Okay. And also from that point we want to know how we end up there. And so that's the question we have to address. Or we can take the alternative view using anthropic principle, which essentially means there's no predictive power in some sense. Okay. Since the landscape is so large, that actually reduces the whole string theory to something which is not quite a physical theory in a sense that if you can't predict, it's hard to call it a real model. So the basic idea we want to propose is that if we can worry about tunneling from nothing, which I described in some more detail, then we can see that calculate the tunneling probability from nothing to any point in landscape, and maybe we can argue which point in landscape has large tunneling probability, and that's the point we should end up with. Okay? The points with small tunneling probability should not be considered as possible universe. Okay. Now, this idea actually is around for quite some time, and the stumbling block of applying this idea is that the Hadamard-Hawking wave function has some problems with it. Yes?
I'm going to momentarily defend the dark side.
Okay.
You say that if a vacuum has a small tunneling probability, then we can't end up there.
Right.
But if the anthropic kind of reasoning or environmental selection
right.
is correct, if
right.
that's the only place that life can emerge,
yes.
well, that's where we will.
Well, so let me say what I mean by big and small. Okay, then we can argue on that. Okay. It really has to matter for all the magnitude. When I say probability is big, what do I mean by big? And when small, what do I mean by small? Then we can go and argue that point. Okay. I don't mean we have to tunnel to the place which has the highest probability, but we have to tunnel to a place which the probability is reasonably large. And we discuss the number.
We'll
discuss the number. Yes.
Sure. And if there really is an anthropic selection, then
well, we'll see. We'll see. Yeah. That discussion can go on forever. So we'll come back to that. So at least what we want to propose is that we want to improve on the wave function, and then we're going to use the wave function that's improved to propose something we call selection of the original universe principle, which is a little bit different from tunneling to what we want directly. Okay. So anyway, I'll explain this. So the key point of tunneling from nothing is the following. Think about four-dimensional space-time. We can, of course, consider 10-dimensional later. That you will start from something which down here, and this is proposed by Alex Vilenkin in 82-83 and by Hadamard-Hawking, so-called no-boundary wave function in 83. So we think about the following. The picture is the following. So down here, here this is time, and this is the space which you really span for three-dimensional space, which I draw sort of a through a one-dimensional form. So what we have is that down here, that's really, by nothing I mean there's no classical space or time, okay? Then all of a sudden, we have a Euclidean. This is Euclidean time, generally, say, S4, okay? And then at this point, Euclidean time connect smoothly to Lorentzian time, and then this describes, for example, a De Sitter space, okay? So this is the kind of picture that one argued tunneling from nothing. So the fact that we have Euclidean time over this region is essentially means that this is like an instanton or bounce. So it's like coming from nothing and going through a tunneling period and then generating a universe which evolved in Lorentzian time. Okay, so that's the picture. And I find it very attractive. And the key, of course, is that if you now calculate tunneling probability, then you square the wave function, and then you get really an S4. So S4 is like instanton for the tunneling rate. Okay. So this is the picture which is proposed 83, 84, 82 also. Okay. Now, so let me briefly go over this a little bit more. So we have in four dimensional Euclidean action is given by this, where we only put a cosmological constant to simplify the model. We consider pure gravity at the moment, okay? And I would always consider the lambda to be positive or semi-positive, definite. In that case, that the universe Lorentzian will evolve as a De Sitter space, and we also consider a universe which is closed. So in this case, that we start from a metric ansatz, which is very standard, and this is in a mini superspace in the sense that the only degree freedom sort of cap is the cosmic scale factor A. So A plays the role of a cosmic scale factor. Then the Euclidean Einstein equation can be written in a closed universe, can be written this way. And then you can find the solution is nothing but a cosine, which is start from nothing, go to big ball, go back to nothing. So this is a solution, is the S4. Okay? And of course, you rotate to Minkowski time, then this is the Cauch, which essentially means that cosmic scale factor grows exponentially. Okay, so this is the very simple picture that one has. So the key is that we consider a positive cosmological constant in a closed universe. Okay, otherwise the size is instantons infinite and it's a little bit hard to control. So let me briefly describe the Hartle-Hawking wave function. Sorry, Jim. and roughly speaking, is that what we want to do is that we apply here specifically to the Euclidean region in calculating the probability due to the S4 instanton. Okay, so the calculation is pretty straightforward, and the surprising thing is that the Euclidean action of the S4 instanton is negative. Okay, that's what's interesting, and. People know that the entropy is actually minus the Euclidean action. So what we have is the tunneling probability. There's a minus sign here. Okay, so tunneling probability, as we know, is e to the minus the Euclidean action of the instanton. And so because the minus sign here, and I'm missing a minus sign here, that gives you an exponential of 3 pi over g lambda. Okay, so the key is the g. Lambda. So here we have taken the lambda such as G lambda is dimensionless. Okay, it's a gravity people's notation. So the key here is that this is positive and goes like 1 over lambda. Okay.
So if recollection serves, Lincoln argued for the opposite sign.
I come back to that, yes.
But that sign is critical for your arguments? Or?
No, I think he's wrong.
Okay, but it's important for your arguments or no?
No. No, I think that argument is totally wrong. I would describe a little bit why I think so. Okay, it's a good point. Yes. So I stick to the Hartle-Hawking formulation. Okay, and I come back to Belenkin and also Linde argue same way. Okay. So the problem is the following: in a model where lambda is dynamical, as we know in string theory, the cosmological constant is dynamical. Or if you think in a simpler model like this, you can think about the four-form field string, which will give you a lambda which is sort of sort of semi-dynamical, but it's something which you can vary. Then what happened is that if you look at the Hartog-Hawking wave function, as lambda go to zero, then psi blows up, okay, exponentially blows up. Okay. And in fact, the key point here is that cosmic scale, I mean, it's for those not familiar with cosmology, is that the cosmic scale factor, when the S4 just grows, turn into De Sitter space, the size is 1 over square root lambda. Okay, I'm ignoring some factor of 3 here. Okay? So that means that the preferred universe that you want tunnel to is the one with zero cosmology constant, and at the same time, the size is infinite. Okay? So that seems to imply what the answer is. Okay? And this, what happened is that because the Euclidean action does not have a minimum, because as Euclidean, as lambda goes to zero, becomes minus infinity. It's unbounded from below. Okay, so that's the main reason. It's unbounded from below. And because of this unbounded from below, the wave function is not normalizable. Okay?
Not normalizable in an integral over lambda, is that the idea?
You're not normalizable in the sense that you can blow up and there's no, you cannot integrate it to give one. Okay.
Wait. Integrated over
in this case, if you treat A, for example, uh-huh. But A is goes like 1 over square root lambda. Okay. Now, the furthermore, that this would imply a universe which is not what we have today. Okay, so that actually phenomenologically is, you know, it will mean the tunneling to a universe of infinite size with zero cosmology constant.
Well, if in string theory lambda takes discrete, not continuous
yes,
values,
yes,
then you don't have
yes.
a problem with normalizability.
The discrete value including zero, but discrete value including zero.
Well, I guess because
zero is included, right?
Zero is included.
But zero is an exponential point, right?
Yeah.
Well, no, it's not in string theory.
It's discretized.
That would not be fine tuning.
It's discretized, but zero is one of the value.
It's discrete. Yeah, but
well, the negative cosmological constant zero is.
So.
Well, zero from below. It's an accumulation from below. The divergence only appears if you have an accumulation point from above, right?
Right, because right. Because consider instanton, which is S4, for example. Otherwise, the volume is the instanton is not finite. So.
As far as we know, there is no accumulation point from above.
Okay, so didn't Shamik write a paper today or yesterday? Where you can define things with arbitrarily large volume. And
yes. I haven't seen it, but I heard.
You're coming from negative, but you're right. Maybe
right.
That's enough.
Right.
Maybe they just brought this problem back.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Oguri, Vafa, and Velinde also work on what come from negative, so in string theory, in topological string theory. Anyway. So the key is that this divergence, this problem, is related to the very large size universe and very small lambda. Okay, and that's a sort of infrared macroscopic problem, not an ultraviolet problem. So from this point of view, we think that string theory or consistent quantum corrections is not going to be helpful. Okay, and as I said, the work done by Oguri, Vafa, and Velinde, they sort of do some topological string theory, and they also find the universe in the approximation to have preferred lambda equals zero. Okay. So, and then there's also a problem with topologies, because the other topologies can be important, and many people have worked on it in the late 80s and early 90s. Okay. So, essentially, the field sort of in a confused stage. Okay. So what we want to do is we want to see we are convinced that the problem should not be there, because we're talking about semi-classical gravity, and we're talking about infrared or macroscopic distance scale. That gravity should work pretty well. Okay, so somehow the problem must be fixable. Okay, can be fixed. So we propose a way to fix it. Okay, and we're going to go do the calculation to sort of support that, and then we're going to apply it back to on a cosmic landscape. Okay, so let's go back to quantum mechanics, because that's the some of the issues are there already. So consider tunneling from this point over to here. Okay, this is a well understood tunneling problem in quantum mechanics. We all know WKB to calculate. Okay, now suppose, and This is done by Sethna and Kadarin Leggett in the early 80s. Same time, more or less, about the Harold Hawking Wilenkin's idea, is that suppose instead of I have a Q, say consider a particle Q, that is trying to tunnel. Okay. However, that particle Q also interact with other degrees of freedom. So typically, you can think about electron tunneling, maybe in the presence of phonon, for example. Okay. So they have some condensed matter system to apply to. But what we really want to do is that I can calculate tunneling probability of a Q with given potential UQ, which I just shown, and that WKB works very well. But now, suppose that Q interact with other degrees of freedom, okay, which we call X, a whole bunch, okay, X degrees of freedom. Now, of course, the X degree of freedom will couple to Q, and they do some simple coupling. Okay, we can do other more non-trivial coupling, but the basic idea is the same. So what we want to do is we want to measure the tunneling rate of Q in the presence of the other degrees of freedom X. Okay. Since what we're measuring is Q and we're not measuring X, okay, so in quantum measurement language, we treat Q as a system and we treat X as environment. Okay. So that means that Q is interacting with the environment. And since you're not measuring environment, you should integrate them out. Okay. Or in density matrix language, you trace them out. Okay. And then that will have an impact on what happened to Q. Okay. So that means the tunneling rate must be modified somewhat. And the calculation actually is quite straightforward. They did it. And then you can do it in path integral language, which is what we're going to use. So we go to that. Is that you have, usually you calculate this, is that you take out the WKB approximation, and then you have the term which is from the interaction of Q with X, and then you trace out the X because you're not measuring it. And in tracing out the X, you get an additional term, which here called chi Q. Okay? And that additional term suppresses the tunneling. Okay? That means that if Q don't interact with anything else, no environment, and tunnel through, WKB works very well. But now if Q interacts with environment, then the tunneling rate typically is suppressed. Okay?
Does that depend on what state the environment's in?
Well, they have done a few cases, and then they argue in general that should be true. Okay. But I don't know, question how general should be true, it depends on the detail of the model. So in each model, you should work it out. Okay?
Do they take harmonic oscillator using vacuum?
Yeah, they take some simple harmonic oscillator, but and then with the arbitrary masses, arbitrary number of harmonic oscillator, arbitrary frequency, and then couple them to Q linearly.
And then use the vacuum state?
Or use the vacuum state?
No, they use a thermal state.
Well, you can do that too, yes, yes. That they did it a number of different ways, and they argue that this is generic, okay? So
the chi is not generic, it depends on
yeah, that's right. That's of course, chi depends on the detail of the physics, okay? But the fact that chi is positive, okay, that's what they claim to be generic. That means it always suppresses the tunneling, okay, not enhance it. Okay. The physical reason is quite clear. We can see the number of ways. Is that increase in action. Okay, so instead of having just 1 degree of action, which we calculate just WKB, what we're now doing is that instead of in a space of Q, we have Q and X alpha. So the path actually is longer because you wander in the X direction as well. Okay, so the metric is that dq squared plus all of the, oh, that's a square here, sorry, so x squared. So the path is longer, and that's why tunneling takes longer to do, and that's why it's suppressed. Okay, that's a simple way, so we can see mathematically how that happened. Okay, the other way to see it is that Q interacts with the X, the environment. So that interaction we can see as that the environment acts like we try to measure where Q is. So you want to see the Q is going to tunnel through or not. Suppose you take a year, and then you measure every second to see it tunneling through or not. Okay, and that really interferes with it, and that actually suppresses the tunneling if you want. Okay, and this is you interfere with it. Okay, you can see this the same way is that interaction with environment actually make it the system more classical. And if the system more classical, the tunneling rate is suppressed. Okay, they are all actually the same physics. Okay, and this is means that this in this language is the coherence. Means that the interaction with other fields cause the coherence and make it more classical. And this are well understood concept in quantum measurements. Okay, and of course by now the.
What you're calculating is the effective action, the effective potential for.
Well, I calculate the tunneling rate.
For Q, right?
That's right.
And
some state.
Yes, what? In some state.
In some state. All this, as you say, represents the results of interaction, but it's not fundamentally different from any other effective action. What you're saying is.
That's right. This is a starting point for treatment while a quantum system slowly become classical. So for example, we take a particle, make it more and more massive, and become marble mass. Why become classical? So this is a way to see.
Why?
Okay. Usually we think it's intuitive obvious, but this is a quantitative you can control. Okay. How a quantum system become classical in a quantitative way. Okay. So.
You have to make assumptions about the relative gaps and so on in the two.
Oh, yeah, this is. I just use this. The calculation for what we want to do, of course, is completely well defined within gravity. So I just use to motivate what's going on. Okay. You can do it many different ways. In fact, they have, between Sethner and Kadar and Leggett, they did it in a number of different ways and argue all sorts of ways. If you change this, what happened? You change that, what happened?
Well, for example, it might not be described simply by an effective action, but because you have to, if there aren't relative gaps, you'd have to trace out.
That's right. Then you have to include that the gap, you mean in the environment.
Yeah, you have to include
that. Then that means omega is big, for example, or something. Or you have a different description for the environment. Okay, here just a simple harmonic, but you can do other things.
I'm just saying,
For gravity, more complicated. Okay.
You get a density matrix as opposed to a.
That's right. You can do density matrix way. Here I do partinor way, which is more suitable for us. But sometimes the calculation done density matrix way. Actually, in fact, most of the description is density matrix description. Okay, formally. Okay, so now what I want to say is that for the cases we have earlier, okay, for this case, of course it's bounded from below. Okay, so this interaction with the environment or the coherence effect really just a quantitative correction. Okay, it doesn't change things in a major way. However, for gravity, because what we have seen the wave function range is unbounded below, then there's a hope that the coherence will provide a correction such that will provide a bound to the Euclidean action. And so in that sense, the hope is that for gravity, the change is sort of qualitatively significant and not just quantitative difference. Okay. And I should point out that the effect here is not a one loop effect. Okay, so that's important. Okay. Okay, so the calculation now is very clear. So what we do is that we notice following in the calc.
You said it's not one loop in the gravity.
Well, in certainly in the fact that tunneling is suppressed is due to the presence of the environment. It's not a sort of one loop field theory kind of calculation. You can include loop, but the effect is really more elementary than one loop in a sense, more like a quantum, only quantum or semi-classical. Okay. Okay, so and this is important because we're going to do a calculation, and it, in some sense, it looks like one loop, but it's not. We'll come to that. Okay, so I just want to point out that to be aware of. So now we go back to what have been done is that in a mini superspace, the cosmic scale factor A is included. Okay, it's capped. Okay, now we know that if you take that metric, and you can perturb it. And then there would be metric perturbations like tensor modes, typically, even in pure gravity, or there would be matter fields coming in. Okay. Now, in the mini superspace calculation, they are sort of ignored. Okay. So question is, suppose I include the metric perturbation or the scalar field, which interacts with A, that maybe they will provide a suppression of tunneling. Okay, and maybe they will provide tunneling suppression in a way such that the Euclidean action is bounded. Okay, so that's what we are aiming at. Okay, and I will try to justify them for you today. Okay, so now, because the other modes are not measured, even they are present, so what you're really doing, you're tracing them over, integrate them over, but integrate them over will give you some effect left behind, which is different than just forget about that. Okay, so they are different. Okay, so in a sense, we're going beyond the mini superspace with only A, but include the other degree freedom, but we're not measuring them, but we just trace them over. Okay, now, the key is the following. Naively, if I just integrate them out in the S4 background, we don't find such a correction term, okay? Which is not too surprising because many people have done this kind of calculation before. Okay? So the key is the following, is that we believe that if you integrate them over, and then the decoherence term will modify the solution such no longer S4, okay? So that means that we should integrate them over in a way which we keep A arbitrary, and then after we have find a term, then we solve for what the bounce or instanton solution is. Okay, and that means that we have to include the back reaction. Okay? If you don't include the back reaction, you won't pick it up. Okay, and that's the key point of making this work.
I'm wondering about something. The large spheres is one example where the action becomes very large and negative. But it's not the only one, right? The Euclidean-Einstein action is unbounded from below in many ways.
Yes.
Take any metric and put a very wiggly conformal factor and get a large negative action. So are you suggesting that this...
That's other topologies, for example.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
But is this mechanism supposed to regulate the Euclidean action completely or just in this...
We haven't really checked that, but... as far as I can tell, it should just regulate. That means the other topology should be suppressed as well. So we'll see. Okay,
it's how do? The topology is just a different mode.
Different, if you want, right?
It's just fluctuating.
Or really not the instead of S4, you know, like Joe have this, you know, I don't know. What I don't know what the beads of X4, you know, a wormhole, you know, which is very many people work in the late 80s because if you have S4, you can have all the other possibilities. So, and that's where all the problem is. Okay, none of them help you to solve the problem. They just tells you, you know, there's a big problem here. Okay. So then what we would do is now we just do the metric perturbation, and it's well developed by many people. I'm sure people in this room as well. So I'm going to just skip that and go to the key point. The key point is the following. You have a gravitational perturbation, which we have A, and then we introduce some perturbation, which should be there. Okay. And so in the mini superspace, in a sense, that means if I only keep the cosmic scale factor, the Euclidean action is given by this. Okay. We put a zero implying that's nothing else. Now, if I keep this, then I can now include all the modes, and it's easy to expand the modes, and mostly the tensor, that's the two tensor modes, and then there's you can take the S3 spherical harmonics and expand it, you know, and then you get the amplitude. The amplitude is I call Fn for n run from you know, all the way, you know, to from 1 to on. And so in fact, each term, the amplitude has the interaction of the following form. The A cube is very clear. It's just nothing but the volume. And then this is N squared minus 1 over A squared F. So we keep the quadratic piece of those metric perturbations. Okay, you can do scalar field, but at a mass term, but very similar. Yes. Okay.
So just
this is after gauge fixing, do all the things. Yes.
Yeah. So for future reference, what is the small parameter that is justifying dropping higher order terms here?
That's a good question. Yes. At the moment, I don't know how to calculate if you keep the F, say, cube high terms. Yes. So I just keep the lowest one. And the higher term actually is, so suppose F to the cube, okay? The metric tensor cubic, that should goes like G, Newtonian coupling, and that should be suppressed. So
Because that will tell you when.
So those should be suppressed.
Of your effective action.
Right, right. That eventually, yes, that will tell us how good our approximation is. Right. But
in the usual wave function calculation, I mean, you have to do the fluctuations, arguments, the wave function.
Right.
And you're exploring the space where those amplitudes are small.
Right.
And that's
right.
What gives you
the right. 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 Right.
Input parameter.
Right. Right. Right.
In the action.
Yes. Yes.
There's some dependence on A, presumably, also, right?
If
it gets really small, then this gets strongly
compact. That's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So here we only do Euclidean. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So what the partial integral is roughly given by dA, which we're not going to integrate over because we keep A. But then it's a product of N, which is that all these amplitudes N of all the modes. And so here the first term is the Euclidean action, which is given by this. And then we have this extra piece, which is given by this. Okay. And we have the sum over N. Okay. So that's the new piece. And so the idea is to trace over Fn. So for each Fn, we take tracing is that instead of having initial final different, we impose a condition initial equals final and integrate over that. So this is tracing over the amplitudes, tracing out the so-called environment. Okay.
One of the things that puzzled me about your paper was this last formula. Right? I mean, you seem to be taking the wave function,
right? Right.
And on these other degrees of freedom.
Right.
Right. And then you're integrating.
Trace them over.
Tracing. Well, not tracing.
Well, integrate them out.
The
right.
Function,
right.
Those other degrees of freedom.
Right.
That's not usual quantum mechanical stories of integrating out degrees of freedom.
Well, it's, yeah, here. Yeah. Okay.
Which you should take. The square, and then integrate out the other degrees of freedom. So how do you get it?
Yeah, what we're really doing is that we calculate the probability. Okay, so this is really the S4 Euclidean action, and so our calculation really is in terms of the probability, where the first term is Euclidean action, and then we calculate the correction to the Euclidean action. More like Caldera-Leggett they're doing for the probability instead of in terms of wave function. Okay, so maybe that formula. Yeah, but I think Caldera-Leggett showed that why we use it instead use Sethner is because instead of density matrix they use the partial integral language, which is more suitable for us to do here. So our calculation really is a probability, Hunting probability rate.
Right? Yes.
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 Right.
For what the initial density
yes.
matrix was, and then
right.
Using
So because of the back reaction, so it sort of tells you what it should be in a moment. So.
But, are you saying that if you did the calculation properly and computed the density matrix, then in the end you could always take it and decompose it into the square of some thing you're getting?
Yeah, that's our belief, yes. Okay. Following Caldera-Leggett's calculation, that's our belief. Yes.
No, but it okay. doesn't go. I mean, Caldera-Leggett, just if you analyze
right.
the answer
right.
for what they get for, they don't get an effective action, but they would.
Well, they get essentially a Euclidean action. Well, I should write this as probability. The tunneling coming from WKB plus correction term.
So
and we try to match.
Not only on the original action, but on properties of the state. The temperature, can you particular? Right, the typical example.
Well, in the calculation at the end, the temperature really doesn't come in. Okay, the temperature will come in only has to do with the quantitative magnitude. Here we just want to see that what's the effect of integrating out the environment. The environment can be not in thermal. There's no reason they have to be in thermal.
No, in fact, the environment has to be in thermal.
Right.
It does depend on the state of the system. As you
yes.
said just a little bit
right.
a while ago, your chi depends on the state.
Yes, yes, right, system. Right, yes.
But now you seem to be saying it doesn't depend on the state.
Well, it depends. We're choosing this particular in the quadratic form, and then we're just going to trace out the F and get whatever effect comes over.
Prescription for tracing out F.
The usual prescription you talk about density matrix way, do it.
Right.
Right, right. Here we're doing.
So if you're saying somehow the usual prescription reduces to this.
Yeah, that's my understanding, at least in a quantum mechanical case. So we certainly have not proved in this case, but we just feel the physics is the same. If not, that would be very interesting, yes.
You might be saying something like, if you do take the Euclidean action for the fluctuation,
right.
then you're effectively dealing with the state if you calculate the wave function.
Yes.
And all the fluctuations are in the ground state.
Well, the fluctuation, I won't say the ground state, yes. In a sense, you could say that, yes. But you, we'll see how it come out, and then we can interpret it after you get it.
The wave function should depend on the amplitudes of the fluctuation. Then you square it, and then you can look at the ground.
Yeah, that probably would be another way to calculate it, yes.
Well, there's a time there, so it's really like being a planet.
Yeah, this time is integrated over, for example, the bounce, right? The instant time. So if I take S4, in fact that's what we're gonna just do naively. I take the S4. So the n, each n is of this form, which we keep the quadratic term. And then, of course, I can integration by parts, and I can give this plus a surface term. Okay. This actually tells you why it doesn't work in the simple case. Of course, this, so you're looking at the settle point, you put the classical solution, and of course this is goes zero in the, because the equation of motion said this goes zero, and you only level it with a surface term, okay?
This now, doesn't work in the S4 case.
Yeah, this doesn't work in the S4 case because the A0 is described the S4 from, in terms of tau, goes from south pole to north pole, but both in the south and north pole, A equals zero, A vanishes. So this actually is zero. So in the S4 case, you don't generate a term, okay? And this is indicative, but you do a more careful calculation, it shows that.
Isn't that just the definition of the total?
Yeah, you can say that. Well, the fact that this, I'm sorry, this is a little bit too simple-minded. Here that this vanishes doesn't mean that you don't generate a term, because what happened is you have to get a fluctuation, you have to separate the classical path from the fluctuation, which we call prefactor. So the calculation is more complicated, but this sort of indicate why you don't generate a term. Okay, you generate a loop loop correction, but not a term.
But if you want to tunnel from nothing,
yes,
you're always starting with something where A.
Yeah, yeah. So we're gonna do it a little bit different. So what we're gonna do is that we're gonna do the integral over the f without taking the solution F4 solution as the background. Instead, we keep it free. Okay. Arbitrary, and then after we finish the calculation, then we can solve for what A comes about. Okay.
Sorry, but the argument you just gave.
Here, I'm taking A to be the S4 solution. So, okay.
What? Fn. What's the general equation then for Fn?
I beg your pardon?
The general equation for Fn. You say that's the equation for the S4.
Right. Well, no. If I calculate, integrate over the F, tracing up or integrate them out, in the background of A, which solve for A4, then we don't generate a term.
Yeah, I understood.
Okay.
But for the
general case, that's what I'm going to go into now. Okay.
So that's second equality, which is
correct. Which one?
Sorry, the first equality. That second line, is that true for S4?
Yeah, this is true, actually. Well, this term is true for S4, okay? And this probably almost by definition, because, you know, you just find the classical, you take this action and then you find the classical.
Yeah, so if you're going from the first line to the second line, you assume it's S4.
Yes, right.
Second line, T is really the
F, isn't it? Oh, yes, where's T? Oh, yes, sorry, T is F, yes. Yes, we're switching T, we call it tensor mode. No, it's like T is tensor mode, F is scalar mode, but we're general, okay? Thank you. Okay, so the calculation actually is somewhat complicated, but roughly the basic point is following. What we want to do is F is quadratic, so it's really like a simple harmonic, you know, you integrate out. The key difference is that it's like a simple harmonic oscillator where the mass is time-dependent and the frequency is time-dependent, that's all. Okay, so that's what happened in the previous one. So the calculation actually is very standard, except that here, like a mass term and frequency term, both are time dependent. Okay, and so what we want to do is that we don't know that time dependence, so we just treat our arbitrary time dependence. So the calculation is messy but straightforward. So what we do, we do a WKB approximation, and roughly speaking is that we have a frequency which is function of A. A is function of tau. You can change the U variable such that in a U variable, the mass is a constant, So if you go to tau variable, even the mass is time dependent. So you can write down the WKB solution roughly is the integral over U of the frequency. Okay, so that's the WKB solution. So you can plug this into the Euclidean action. And the key is that there's always a dn coming in everywhere. And then after you plug it in, you get the following things. Okay, the key is the dn. Okay, dn is really the integral over the instant time. Okay. So the at the end is that we have the dn because e to the dn. So the dn has the form which is the frequency omega over a tau. But omega equals to go like a square. So this really like n over a tau. Okay. So in this in WKB approximation we got this, and then with sum over n. So the sum over n is the frequency, the wavelength cannot be too long because you produce some sort of with the size of a Hubble size. So wavelength, the longest wavelength is Hubble size, but you can have short wavelength, and then short wavelength, we introduce string scale to cut it off. Okay, so that's the key. So the Hubble size essentially give you 1 over lambda square. Okay, so you sum over all the modes, you get 1 over lambda square. Okay, so now that d, actually, just precisely the term which coming in with the Euclidean action plus the d term, and d term is 1 over a, so we, by some change of variable, we just have 1 over a term, okay? And because the sum over the frequency give you 1 over lambda squared. So this is the new term. So without the last term, okay, so the key is without the last term, this is what we used to have for the Mie superspace, okay?
And I'm just slightly annoyed.
Okay, now, by tracing over the metric or the degree, you get the last term, which is 1 over a. Okay.
Remind me, the unboundedness from below was without that term.
Without that term, it's unbounded from below.
Yeah, let okay. me see. A goes to 0 or infinity?
No. A is integrated. Okay, A must be integrated over the bounds, right? I mean, the tau is integrated over the bounds, so what you have to do now is that given this effective Euclidean action, you solve for the classical path, and then you integrate over to get the bounds. Okay, so that's what we're going to do. So before, without this piece, then you just get S4. Oh, sorry. Without this piece, you get S4. Okay, yeah. So now we just have a new piece.
I'm wondering if you're modifying S4 with large radius or small.
Yeah, so we will see. So.
Like the correction, that coefficient is a string scale cutoff.
Yeah, we introduce a string scale cutoff because if you the shorter wavelength, and you need some cutoff, then we introduce string cutoff. So.
I see why you can't have lambda going to zero, but.
Well, okay. Oh, I'm sorry. The big lambda. Yeah. Yes. Okay. I only have one lambda. Okay. Because we in this case the lambda actually rescale to a dimensionless. So, but up to rescaling the, yes.
Isn't the action still unbounded below because of the first term?
Well, we'll see. That's what we're going to do. Okay. So the key, once we have this term, then the rest calculation is just straightforward.
Well, we don't need any further calculation to check on whether the action's.
Right. So like I'm going to do it. Okay. And then we can see the meaning of that term. Okay. So now we have this new Euclidean action. So we call this D, the decoherence term. So it's added to the Euclidean action of this form. So the key, of course, now is that to get a center point approximation of this, we solve the equation of motion coming from this, which now has a one extra piece. And the solution is rather easy to get, turn out. And you can see the following, that as nu go to 0, which we forget about the decoherence effect, then this reduces to S4. Okay, so this is no longer S4, okay, but modify a little bit. Okay. So the modification looks following. As S4, so it's spherical. As you reduce that piece, it sort of developed into a barrel shape. The shape is a barrel instead of S4. Okay, so.
What stops it at the barrel?
What stops it? Good question. I think that the topology, I would say, is the same as this, but the shape become a barrel shape.
So
Is it a boundary or is it sort of flat on the top?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's getting into the region where you don't trust the approximations that give you this correction of the potential anyway, I think. Is that right? It's small a. And in small a, then when your approximation is, or the quadratic approximation is at this.
Well, yeah, so you would say, okay, yeah, I don't know how good approximation is, but on the other hand, you say, well, if it's not good, then you have to include the other term, higher corrections, and then something gets changed. Okay, but, okay. So we can then discuss how good approximation we have, because I really don't know how good approximation we have, but we can look at it, and then we can sort of get some idea, okay? It's something I don't know the answer to.
Can we go back to the previous
yes?
for a second? Because I think Jim was pointing out
this one?
If you look at your modified action,
yes.
And you just ask, is that bounded from
below? I'll come to that. I'll explain that in detail, bounded or not.
Okay. Well, but I'll
come back to that.
There might be some confusion in terminology here.
Right.
The older version of what was meant by unbounded below is you take the form of the action, and I get to pick any A or T I want.
Right. Yes.
And if I can find one that drives right. its negative, right. that right. says it's unbounded
yes.
below.
Yes.
You're talking about yes. whether it's below we'll, evaluated on solutions is we'll, a function of
time. Yes. I come to discuss that. Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good. It's a good point. Yes.
What happens if you take your solution for A and just continue it beyond that boundary?
What?
So can you get back to?
I come back to your point. Okay.
Your solution for A. What stops it? Well, why is there?
Yeah. So if you take mu very small. Then the sphere becomes sort of changed into a barrel shape, and.
But what happens if you just continue with your parameter at all?
The integration is the same as before. So I always say, you know, it's a, you know, you take the sphere and squash it to make it barrel-like.
That looks different.
It looks like a barrel.
Huh? Yes. What?
I think you fix sort of the range of tau at this end, but the job.
Yeah.
Yeah,
why don't you continue
test?
Oh, it's not. I thought it was by
barrel,
you think that there was a flat
part. Yeah, I think it's a flat part. It's like taking S-force.
It's going to go singular.
No, I don't think that jump will cause any trouble because I'm...
It is one of these fine
actions in groups. Yeah, so the picture now is more like something like this, which the picture will end up like this, is that we create something, instead of a pure de Sitter, it will be de Sitter with some environment. Okay?
You don't have nothing anymore at the
beginning. Well, this is like the barrel. Okay. So. Okay, all right. Yeah. So it will be like a, you know, take a, I don't know, a wine barrel, you know, and chop it half, and then you glue the Minkowski to it, but there's a bottom at the barrel, so.
Well, you can't say what you have until you know what the theory
yeah.
of everything
right.
is.
Yeah, right, so.
In this sense, a classical approximation.
Yes, yes, I don't.
Concentrate on geometries with no boundary. Just wait.
Yeah, yeah, this in a sense is. right. I should call matrix theory, right? So, okay.
What is the gravitational perturbation?
Yeah, so I'm going to describe this. Okay, so this is more or less trying to answer your question, okay? So what we have is that we have a new term. So let me go back to Lorentzian action to see what, you know, get a feeling what it is, okay? And then we can follow more or less the solving this system, the equation of motion plus the Hamiltonian constraint, which give us essentially the Einstein equations for de Sitter space, except now we have one extra piece, okay, that the new. If you set new equals zero, this is essentially the de Sitter, okay? This small lambda essentially is the big lambda, but scaled away the Newton's constant. Okay? So you can now look at this equation, and you see that this extra piece play exactly role like a radiation. Okay, so that means that the extra piece is just like ordinary radiation. Okay, so now I add the ordinary radiation. That means instead of just having a Newton constant pure de Sitter, now it's like a de Sitter plus some radiation. Okay, and now you can go ahead and calculate if you plug in the wheelie de Witt, you can calculate now the gravitational potential with the presence of Dixier piece and to check that how what it behaves like. Okay. So the physical meaning now is the following. The new term actually behaves like ordinary radiation, which is not too surprising because the environment of these metro perturbations should come in like radiation. Okay. So after tracing it out, they contribute a piece to the Einstein equation as a radiation in addition to the cosmological constant. Okay. So in the S4 spherical instanton leads to pure de Sitter space. So that means if you take the solution of S4, then there's no room for radiation because S4 go to a pure de Sitter. So you can't add radiation. That's why if you take the S4 background, you don't get anything extra coming out. Okay. So what we did is that because the spherical S4 don't allow environment to be present, and that is the environment present will change the shape of S4. So what we have to do is that we have to allow the back reaction, and that's what we did. Okay? So that seems to make perfect sense. So now what happened in the Lorentzian universe evolving is not just de Sitter, but de Sitter plus the radiation. Okay? Now, quantum mechanically, we know the metric and the matter fluctuation must be present. So it's something that if you want to talk about tunneling from nothing, tunneling to de Sitter, then you should allow the possibility of some metric fluctuations. Okay, you can do the massive field. Now, so the key is that now we can go to see what it means. Okay.
Just one question. So the radiation would be gravitational radiation?
In this case, but you can put a scalar field in. The calculation is massless scale, light field, same. The effect is same. Okay. So, but the key is that we believe that in pure gravity, you should have the boundedness should be incorporated. So metric perturbation is really the key to see that's the case or not. Including matter field, you can do it also. Now the formula, so now what we do is the following, is that we go back and calculate probability. Okay. So the probability now, instead of having this term 3 pi over g lambda, which we have before, okay, now this new term come about, and the new term go like 1 over lambda square. Okay. L string to the fourth, and ND is the number of degree of freedom. So if you do pure gravity, the metric tensor have 2 degree of freedom, so ND will be 2, but if you put extra modes, so ND controls the degree of freedom. So if you now want to look at the wave function, instead of having this piece, there's another piece which coming here. Actually, formula is more complicated, but you multiply by relative smooth function, so qualitatively, I don't worry about it, okay? But it does change numerically a little bit. The key, of course, is that also is that if you take the string scale to be a couple order magnitude below Planck scale, some value like that, then this f, not p, f, okay, this is f will go to like 10 to the 8 or 10 to the 15, come down. So f is a huge number. It can be, okay, can be a huge number. So that's key. Now, so one can see the effect of this. Suppose lambda is very big. Then this has no effect whatsoever, because compare this. But when lambda gets small, this becomes more and more important. Okay. So this is the plot. So if I take the original, the simplest case, then the Euclidean action is the blue line, which go to minus infinity. So this is the action, effective or Euclidean action function of lambda. Okay. So this is the problem we have before. Now, once we add the new term, for large lambda, they're more or less the same. But when your lambda gets small, it instead of turn up, so it becomes bounded. Okay, it's no longer unbounded; it becomes bounded. It bounded at some value. Depends. So you fix the string scale, then you can see where that value will be.
I forgot what ND was, but I mean, for typical value, ND whatever it is.
ND2, if you took string theory, maybe 100.
Well, so what do you get out for the cosmological constant there, say, compared to the present cosmological?
Yeah,
constant?
Yeah, I will come. Yeah, I come to discuss a little bit on phenomenology like this, right? So at the moment, I just want to say that including a new piece, we provide a bound. Okay. Now, of course, the key is that on this side, if you get lambda large, then of course the semi-classical approximation breaks down. Okay. For lambda very small, probably additional decoherence term would be important. Or in the case that we have the barrel will sort of get destroyed. And so at the very small lambda, I don't know if destroy means that approximation breaks down or means that the tunneling probability goes to zero. I don't know. Okay, but that will happen with very small lambda. Okay.
Right now, the crossover is around the Planck scale for lambda, right?
Right now, the...
In terms of what you've given...
Depending on what number you're playing string scale.
It's okay. Actually probably a geometric mean of the Planck scale.
And yeah, so I have some number to illustrate for you.
So it's quite far away from the
design. I'll give some number, okay, get some feeling. Okay, so that's what... before I do that, okay, somebody asked Linde? Yeah, that's right, you asked. Okay, so what Linde and Wellington did is that after 84, they, because of this boundedness, so they say instead of rotating time to minus I tau, rotate time to plus I tau for gravity. So you flip the curve, which is, I just take the other figure and rotate it, okay? So it become bounded, the blue become bounded, okay? So that's their position. So you can either do this flip, or sometimes they say, oh, again, there's a minus sign here. It's minus this, so it's guaranteed to be minus, okay? So which is, I think, totally unjustified. Now, if you do pure gravity, there's Linde's argument, okay, you have to talk to him, but his argument is that why do we rotate time t to minus I tau in quantum field theory, in quantum mechanics? The reason is because we want the Euclidean action to be bounded from below. So he said, if you do gravity, in order to bind it, you have to rotate the other way, then that's what you should do. Okay, that's his argument. That's right. That's right. So, but it's very clear that, as Rupakov has shown in a number of papers, that if you include scalar field, then since there's only one time, you can rotate one or the other one. If you rotate this way, of course, the scalar field is unbounded, and then you went to catastrophe. Okay, which?
So, if you get the time this way, obviously that's crazy because matter fluctuations are going to lead to divergent action. But actually, there's another way to get that sign, which is to, basically take the tunneling version of the wave function versus the Hartle-Hawking version of the wave function.
Right. Yeah. So you go to Wheeler-DeWitt, and you can argue the incoming wave, outgoing wave.
Right. Yeah.
Yes. They
take the part with
they,
only.
Yeah. They have. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's the way they. Well, they first do this, and then they do it, justify it. What's incoming, what's outgoing, and then the question is that if it's from nothing, the wave function incoming, outgoing should be zero. If that's the case, then you get Hartle-Hawking. So, okay. I don't know how to say it. It's a 20-year work they have been pushing. I like what Wellington said very clearly. You know, he said that he was talking to Stephen Hawking 2 or 3 years ago, and then he said, how do you like my wave function? And Steve said, you don't have a wave function. This is garbage. It's a big literature I'm not going to go into, but I would consider that if you rotate this way, if you don't put scalar field, I cannot say right or wrong, but if you put scalar field, you're going to get the catastrophe. And so as far as I'm concerned, so now if you do wave function, incoming wave, outgoing wave to argue, but when you get to the partial goal, you get this, you encounter this problem. I don't see much way to get out of it.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Because they are one-to-one translation. Right. Right. So.
You know, you've got to choose a solution. Right. Right. Two solutions.
Right. Yes. Yes.
And you've got to choose a solution.
Right.
These guys choose one.
Right.
Company chooses another.
Right. Right. So I would, I'm not going to, trash them, but I would say the following. If they're right, okay, then that means that the most likely is where lambda is large, and then that means semi-classical approximately breaks down anyway. Okay, that means the dominant probability is when lambda is very large, and so you can't trust your approximation anyway.
Well, you just simply don't get a very sloped distribution.
Right. So and actually, if you try to implement what we are doing to their program, it doesn't work.
Okay.
So that actually is our strongest reason not to use it. But I do think that Rupakov's argument is very strong. So,
well,
and I think Rupakov can apply to wave function as well.
Yeah.
No, I think that's a bit of a straw man, because I think that comes from the other rotation, and you can get this other sign in the tunneling wavefront.
By looking at the incoming outgoing wave. Yes. So. Yes. Possible.
Okay.
Yes. Okay.
The objection to the Lincoln wave function is that the outgoing wave boundary conditions are not generally defined outside
right.
of simple means of
right.
Modes.
Right.
Whereas the topology. Some over geometry.
Yeah.
However you want to find that is if you
right. yeah. My objection is that in order to just get outgoing wave out of tunneling, okay, that you go in back in, then you have a non-zero wave function at A equals zero. And I don't know what that means. Okay, I don't think one can give it proper interpretation. Okay. So the only proper interpretation, if the A equals zero, the wave function should be zero.
Well, okay. Unless there's another sense,
otherwise, you don't even know how to normalize.
Unless there's some sense in which there is a non-trivial state, roughly speaking, at A equals zero in the theory of in string theory.
Yeah, which is no space time.
Tunneling from.
Right. That if you, right.
And that would be the idea for how that would work. To implement it is another math.
So A, even A equals zero, okay, so there's no space, no time, but have some matrix model, some sort. Yes, right, possible, yes, I cannot. One cannot rule that out, right. Okay, so now, of course, we can do the whole thing generalized to 10 dimension, and it's quite straightforward. You just take a 10 dimensional cleaning action and more or less argue the same way. Essentially, four dimensions proportional to V4, so 10 dimensions proportional to V10. Okay, so you can really go and generalize this. And then you can apply this to, again, the four dimension, because that the V10 will split, suppose you compactify the four dimension, then V10 will split to V6 and V4, and V4 give you the instanton size, V6 will be absorbed into a redefinition of the relating the 10 dimensional gravitational constant to four-dimensional gravitational constant, okay? So now we can apply to soup. Okay, what the basic idea of soup is that now we want to tunnel to a universe with large probability, okay? So what we do is that we take that Euclidean action and say we try to vary lambda which maximizes the F, which maximizes tunneling probability, and see what kind of lambda will maximize the tunneling probability. And it gives some formula like this. In the S4 case, and S10 is a little bit more complicated, but you can also do it. Okay, you can do S10 in a number of different ways. So this is roughly the summary of our first paper, except first paper is V9, but the analysis is almost identical. So what we have is that the tunneling probability is given e to the f. F is the minus the effective action. So we call the Euclidean action, but with a decoherence term in it. Okay, so. So now we can go ahead and calculate tunneling to all possible vacuum we have. And so the highest probability, of course, is that this function is the smallest Euclidean action because it's minus this. So the lambda around here will be preferred over lambda going large or smaller lambda. So that means some intermediate lambda is preferred. Okay, not small lambda, not large lambda. Okay, so that's the result of this. So if we take the string scale in a way such that brain inflation, as given by KKMT, fits the data. So that fixes the string scale roughly, it depends on warping, but roughly around gut scale, okay? Or maybe around there. Then you can now calculate F. And you can calculate F by varying the flux, the R flux and the NS and S flux, because the varying the flux, F changes. So you can take the scenario. Of course, the analysis is very crude because a lot of things are not calculated precisely. But you can really show that you can vary the flux in a way such that F is maximized. Okay, so that tells you how much warping it is. And you get something F like 10 to the 14 within a few orders of magnitude because of the details. Okay. Now I can go ahead and calculate 10 dimensional De Sitter space. 10-dimensional De Sitter space. First, let me talk about supersymmetric vacua. Supersymmetric vacua is totally suppressed, okay? Because this thing blows up. Now, that means that the S blow up to infinity, and then the minus is totally suppressed. So that means
lambda equals zero.
Yeah, because it's lambda is zero. Okay, it's totally suppressed.
What about supersymmetric breaking?
So it depends how much you break. So first let me do the 10-dimensional Dirichlet space. If 10-dimension universe supersymmetric, of course, totally suppressed because it's in this region. And now you can put some brains in it. In particular, you can put, say, D9, D9 bar brains, for example, field of space. Then you find that F is very small compared with this. You know, actually, sometimes it's around zero, okay? Around one, okay? Actually, F is around one. It really depends detail, but it's many order of magnitude smaller than something which is fit inflation or universe, okay?
How do you get the 10 to the 14?
10 to the 14 you obtain by the following.
I mean, or how do you get something really big? Just
yeah, the reason is the following. What you do is that you have Newton's constant and the string scale are two parameters you don't know, okay? So you choose a Clavier which sort of tells you what Newton constant is, and you use Newton constant to fix the V6, and then the string scale you use the inflationary data to fix it, okay? So okay, because we have without any data, string scale can be TV to gut scale or somewhere in between, okay? So we use the inflationary data to fix the string scale. Now, fixing the string scale doesn't mean that we prefer inflation universe. That's a string scale. And then we can calculate the other one, other tunneling vacuum. They may have larger, smaller probability. Okay, but we just say that let's fix string scale to be gut scale. And then the inflationary scenario will fit the data. Okay.
So 14 parametrically, that's big parametrically in terms of what number.
This is a pure number because this is probability e to the f. So there's nothing else I can compare to.
No, it's I'm just saying how f is a ratio. Well, how do you?
It's like a m prime over m string to the fourth.
10 to the 14. Oh, over
yeah.
The fourth.
Yeah, okay. Something like that coming. Okay, that's what happened. Okay. So if you take the string scale to be three order magnitude below that, then you get 10 to the 12, 10 to the 13. So, and then you furthermore you go into calculation and you change the flux to maximize f. Okay. So essentially warp it. So essentially the reason you try to reach this point, and the reason you try to reach this point is because you can change the flux. How much warping means that what's the effective cosmological constant? Okay. So you change the flux such that you maximize to hit the bottom here. That's what happened. Okay, so you can see order of magnitude why it's 10 to the 4th, plus minus few order of magnitude.
It's dominated by the smallest possible value of the string scale.
That's right. Because I fixed string scale to be around gut scale. That's important. You can fix string scale some other scale, then the all the phenomenology changes crucially, of course. Okay. Once I fix that, then in order to get 10-dimensional Dirichlet space, I just put the brain anti-brain pair, okay? And if you put many pair, then of course you don't trust your calculation because the lambda is big. And also, the probability decreases. So you put one pair, and one pair around sit around here, and depends on detail, it can be 1 or 10 to the 4 or something like that, which is much smaller than the other case. The reason, because the lambda in this case is not warped. Because once you fix the string scale, the brain tension is fixed, so the cosmological constant is fixed. So that's why you end up somewhere there, okay? Now, you can do a KKLT or like today's universe, then you find that the F, if you use that formula, is like, that means take today's dark energy as cosmological constant, then F is like 10, it's smaller than minus 10 to the 100, okay? So if you plug this number in, it's totally suppressed. And that's even assuming that the tunneling is not destroyed. Okay, which is something we don't know. Okay, but in any case, totally negligible. Okay, totally negligible. So the picture is that if you're willing to take the string scale to be gut scale, which seems to be the preferred scale, then you find that the tunneling don't like to go to any supersymmetric vacuum or 10-dimensional Dirichlet vacuum. Actually, when I say 10-dimensional Dirichlet, I can have S4 cross S6, S5 cross S5, and all. That's simple-minded cases. But the case with warp geometry, inflation scenario seems to be preferred. Okay. Okay, I'm 5 minutes or something. Okay. So what we have is the soup is the following. The basic idea is the following, is that the coherence term must be included in the improved wave function. Okay, so what we did is the simplest extension of the mini superspace. I mean, clearly one can do a much more careful calculation to see that how good approximation we have, how, you know, maybe some quantitative feature we have is would be further modified, but that's more involved calculation. But we just want to point out that the decoherence seem to provide a bound to the problem of the original wave function and the probability calculation. Okay, so now one can use the improved wave function or improved probability to calculate tunneling to any point in the landscape. And what we find is that the one very much like the inflationary universe we've gone through seems to be preferred. Okay, and that one also will have produced not a pure de Sitter, but with some radiation, but of course the radiation will be rapidly ratcheted away. So now, once we create that universe, okay, then it will evolve, follow a path, which will then, you know, end inflation and roll down, okay? And so our universe should end up at where this roll will lead us to. That means we don't go direct, that means we don't tunnel directly to a universe today. We tunnel to a universe, which is the inflationary universe, we call the original universe, and that universe will evolve to today's universe. So if any universe which is not along that path, okay, then even that universe is very beautiful, if the road doesn't lead there, we won't go there. So the decoherence will have other implications, which I'm not going to say much. Another speculation is the following. This is even more speculation, is that if I start, for example, if I tunnel through, tunnel doesn't like to be large cosmological constant and doesn't like to be small or zero. It like to be some intermediate value, so maybe somewhere like here. And then the universe is going to evolve n, and down the wave function now may not be just going classically to a particular ground state, local minima, but maybe form some sort of block wave function as Godikin, Perry, and Zico proposed. However, that block wave function, of course, will sample a large number of vacuum in one neighborhood. The neighborhood is just where the inflation reverse is lead to. Then the coherence will collapse that wave function. Okay, it will collapse that wave function to probably one particular metastable vacuum. Now, since it could sample a huge number, I don't know how large, maybe a billion or maybe some large number, then it will probably collapse to the one with the smallest cosmological constant among the sample that it have overlap.
Why
positive? Because in order to sample them, there has to be non-zero tunneling between them. Okay, because it essentially means that you can go from one to the other one. And from Coleman DeLucia, that it doesn't sample the negative cosmological constant ones. So. Okay. I don't know how to do that. Yeah, maybe you can, because the geometry is totally different. So.
Positive negative is.
You crunch?
Yeah, you can. But you're not crunching yet. I mean, that's later. If it's negative, it's small compared to, I mean, the probable today's cosmology possibly would not have crunched yet.
Could you be assuming that you're headed for a crunch?
Hi.
There's a logical possibility until the dark energy is
measured.
Okay.
Right. Okay. So
possible.
This is contradicted by experience, right?
Okay. This means anthropic, but okay. Anyway. Okay. Let me summarize. Okay. So what we have done is that we feel that clearly a more careful analysis and is needed, but we feel that if you include the decoherence or environment effect, then you should get a more consistent wave function, and we should, once we have that, that will automatically provide bound, lower bound to Euclidean action. And once you provide lower bound, then the tunneling probability to that lowest value will be by far the largest, and then one can apply the program. Now, the calculation is very crude, but we also see that the exponent, not just tunneling probability, but the exponent will differ by many orders of magnitude. So even a crude calculation will show what's not highly unlikely versus what's likely, as you asked earlier that so with the today cosmological constant F is minus 10 to 100 versus something 10 to 14. So that's I think the difference is so huge that I won't worry about other issues. This should dominate. And furthermore, one can think actually this as a measure in a sense, if you want to ask what's a measure of comparing various vacuum. And our final universe should not be the one that we tunnel to, because in this, at least in this picture, it's totally unlikely, but rather that it would tunnel to a universe which then evolved to today's universe. Now it's important to look at, so far we have looked at only some of the vacuum. We don't know that maybe there's some six-dimensional vacuum or three-dimensional vacuum which is more preferred, we don't know. But of the vacuum we examine, it seems that the four-dimensional vacuum, the inflationary one, is the one very close to what we observationally know, seems to be the one that's most preferred. You know? So it would be important to explore other vacua to see how this time we probably really pick out four-dimensional inflation universe versus any other vacuum. We don't know, but it's hopeful. So, okay, thanks.
So could you write, well, you have this F equals 10 to the 14 in the preferred case. Could you write the formula that you get that from in terms of
Yeah, it's a long story. So you have to look at our first paper. So our first paper, what I did is that instead of V10, we take V9. If you look, so you may think that the answer will change, but what we did actually originally is we don't know it's V10 or V9, so we did both. And when we write a paper, we choose V9. The V10 answer doesn't change that much.
But look at
okay. But yeah, so it's really. The problem, we can't do a very precise calculation because, for example, GKP you have a lot of things which order one, you know. And those number, if you change a little bit, the answer change, so it varies. Okay. So but the key is that we use the cosmic microwave background data to fix string scale, because that's the only parameter really we have here, which is crucial, and that to be gut scale. Once you fix that, then essentially, relatively speaking, is parameter free. Okay, but
you integrated somehow over all these fluctuations. But some people might like to follow it, right? Because after all,
some people like
might like to follow the fluctuations.
Yes.
After all, they're the origins.
That's right. That's right.
Fluctuations in the universe. So suppose we don't, of course, graining in which you followed them. Would you still somehow get the same behavior?
Oh.
Or would it disappear?
I think
it's a more general one.
Yeah.
You're integrating out over all these perturbations, arguing that you don't observe them. But in cosmology, essentially everything that you observe.
That's right.
The universes that you create remain, perturbations are not over there, so they.
Yeah. Yeah. So the whole idea of decoherence applied to. The inflation universe, many people have worked on, Halliwell, Lukow, Kiefer. So essentially, the problem there they're addressing is that if I have a wave function for the universe, then when we calculate density perturbation from inflationary fluctuation, we are assuming a classical universe evolving, and in a classical background, we calculate the quantum fluctuation to get density perturbations. How do I know the wave function of the universe tells us evolve more or less classically? Okay. Which is not obvious, because if the wave function evolved like what you want, which is not may not be classical, then how can you calculate the density perturbation, quantum fluctuation, around something which is very quantum? So they have applied the coherence idea to this. And in that case, of course, the fluctuation are really in the universe. And what they find is that if you include the fluctuations, then as the universe evolves as function A go to A plus epsilon, is totally Gaussian suppressed. Okay, so that means that the universe, there's no interference between them, and so treating universe as classical is a reasonable approximation. So in that sense, the fluctuation in the evolution of, say, the inflation universe have been studied in some detail by these people.
But it's the same.
Not quite the same, because they're not applying to S4, so their fluctuation was there, they don't get lost.
But it's the same degree. I mean, what Thomas is yes. saying is, you don't have that anymore. Yeah, your universe is pat may pass the soup principle, but they flunk the anthropic principle. Okay.
No. Once I create the universe with some radiation, the radiation get redshift rapidly, okay?
Exactly.
And then the universe, you know, if you assume this inflaton field, okay? So then inflation will end, and things get produced, and the inflaton will produce the density perturbation, and that's why. No. One has integrated out as you produce it. This is the Euclidean. Okay. Now I can always choose not to integrate the inflationary density perturbation out. I mean, I don't have to integrate all of them out. Whatever I choose to measure, I don't integrate out.
No, there's a unique relation between the spectral fluctuation right. during inflation right. and the spectral Euclidean solution.
Right. But that's inflated away.
And you've integrated that out.
Right. Right. So for example, the correct way to do is the following. I may want to integrate metric perturbation out or some perturbation or some other field out, like model I, but I don't want to integrate out the inflaton field. Okay, that's what you said. Okay, so I should keep.
I'm talking about gravitational lift
spectrum. So you can keep the gravity, then I can integrate a model I. You know, if you do string theory, that's, you know, all the model I. I integrate out all the model I out and I can keep whatever I want to keep. The fact that you're keeping what you have not integrated out shouldn't change your physics. Just means the analysis is more non-trivial. That's all.
Just one more point, right? I mean, I just like to add a plea. Please don't call this decoherence, right? Because there are already two different definitions of decoherence in the literature. It's a source of immense confusion. But they all have to do with the dissipation of phases. Right, which is not what you're talking about.
No, I think that's one way of applying decoherence, but decoherence is very general.
Okay, well, we can discuss.
Okay, I'll discuss with you. Because
I think it's going to be very confusing.
It's
only terminology. Yeah.
I can rewrite the paper. But
I get confused with
terminology. Certainly, you're not saying that. We can talk about after.
Okay.
Your statement that this bounds the Euclidean gravitational action is just wrong. I mean, you have a saddle point. I mean, your solution is a saddle point. It's not a minimum of the action. And you can, even with your correction term, the action is clearly or can be made arbitrarily negative, not for the particular family of solutions you look at. It's bounded on that one kind of family of solutions.
Right.
But for more general field configuration.
That's true. That's why the universe inflates, you know, in a sense. You can think about that way.
Okay.
Yes. But in a sense, that's why the universe can inflate, you know, just sort of grow unbounded if it's not. Or the Sitter space just can't go forever. Okay.
Yeah,
that's right. I didn't solve that problem because I'm not sure I want to solve that problem.
That's how you get out of classical space time. Otherwise, you never get an oscillating wave function.
Yes.
Whatever the predictions for inflation, you at least have to predict space time is possible.
Right. Here we worry about the Euclidean in a tunneling probability. That's all. So.
Hey, Henry.
Hi.
I love you. You're great, but we have to take over the room.
Okay.